This time, no, I just want to each time give you a little bit of teaching about Our Lady of Fatima. And then this time I just want to share with you about, you know, the year before Our Lady apparition, the angel appears three times to the children. When the angel appeared first time to the children, he said to them, it was in the spring of 1916, huh? He said that, do not be afraid, I am the angel of peace, pray with me. And then kneeling on the ground, he bowed down until his forehead touched the earth, and then led by a supernatural impulse, the children did the same, and repeated the words which they heard him say. That is the one that we say at the beginning of our meeting, my God, I believe, I adore, I hope, and I love thee. I beg pardon of thee for those who do not believe, do not adore, do not hope, and do not love thee. And so, after repeating this word three times, the angel rose and said, pray thus, the hearts of Jesus and Mary are attentive to the voice of your supplications. Then he disappeared. And so there was a supernatural atmosphere, you know, the children experienced. And that experience, they just want to keep quiet. They just want to keep it to themselves. And they didn't feel like talking about it to it, to one another, and also not to talk to other people. When Our Lady appeared, it was a bit different. They feel that desire to share, to talk about it. But the angel is a bit different. They want to keep quiet. So actually, when Our Lady appeared, people knew about, they saw Our Lady. But it was only after the death of Jacinta and Francisco, when Lucia was ordered to write down what she remembered, that the story about the angel came out from her writing. So it was an astonishing thing. You know, it wasn't known at all before. They only knew about the apparition of Our Lady, but the angel apparition was only known years later through the writing of Lucia herself. So that's about the first apparition. We will continue next time. And now, today we have the relics here. So some of the things I will talk about this evening is the Blessed Dominic of, I think it's Mother of God. Last Sunday, when I preached on Pentecost, I talked about Blessed Mary of Jesus Crucified, her great devotion to the Holy Spirit. You can listen to my sermon online if you want to. And then coming Sunday, I will preach about Blessed Elizabeth of the Trinity, which is about the Holy Trinity, coming Sunday. If you are a St. Patrick, you heard those sermons before already, because I'm now recycling my sermon from 3 years ago. Because since I've been moved...
Are you giving your notes?
Huh? No, I remember what I said.
Yes.
Okay, what I said 3 years ago. Because it was based on my article in 2010 from the BC Catholic. So I just take out my article and I knew what I'm going to talk about. Yes. Okay, I recall myself. Okay. And... yeah, by the way, I start recording myself again because in the last few months I stopped recording because I thought nobody would listen to my recording about prayer group. But actually, I was wrong. I got requests that I put them up online again and people want to listen. So I just keep recording now. And then if you go to my site, fatheranthonyho.com, there is two new sessions there. One is called English Talk and one is called Chinese Talk. So you know where to find the talk now. Okay. So this is St. Teresa, the little flower, her bones. And then this is St. Philip Neri, usually he is honored on May 26th, so coming up. St. Mary Magdalene de Passy, honored on May 25th. And then also St. Rita, honored on May 22nd. Now, the St. Mary Magdalene and St. Rita, they are second-class relics here, they are from their clothing. Okay, the rest, I believe, from their bones. Here we go. And then I got the clothing of St. Faustina here, which is right here. So second class of St. Faustina, because I will talk about her tonight as well. So here we have. Remember last time we talked about the French Revolution, and also, after the French Revolution, the church need to be rebuilt. And so 19th century was a century we see that after the 1700s, after the 18th century, a lot of bloodshed, a lot of chaotic thing going on. In the 19th century, the church is now rebuilding slowly. So one of the blessed is Blessed Frederick. Blessed Frederick is from France, And he was the founder of St. Vincent de Paul Society. So what happened was, at that time, the atmosphere was still anti-church, anti-clerical. And so the young people, they gathered together having lectures and conferences, you know, to support one another in faith. Now, also in the 19th century was, you know, they have some kind of idea, which is, we know later on become chaotic, is the socialists, you know, communism. So one of the socialist young men challenged and say something like this. He said, the church is Hippocratic, you know, what are you doing for the poor? So that's usually what the left-wing people like to ask. What are you doing for the poor? And so that discussion led to Blessed Patrick to actually start the St. Vincent de Paul Society to actually help to bring the message of the gospel to really help the poor people. And he said, if we are too young to intervene in the social struggle, are we then to remain passive in the middle of a world which is suffering and groaning? No, a preparatory path is open to us. Before doing public good, we can try to do good to a few. Before regenerating France, we can give relief to a few of her poor. Now, Blessed Frederick died. He was a married man with a daughter. He died at a young age of 40. But he, at that time, already had a newspaper called The New Era to secure justice for the poor and the working class. He also oversaw the expansion of St. Vincent Society to other countries. And today, it's an international organization, have over 1 million members, helping 30 million poor people daily. So that's one example of how rebuilding the church after the French Revolution in the 19th century. But also, I have to point out, 19th century is not only for France to rebuild the Catholic Church. It's also in Germany, in Ireland, in England, the church was also being rebuilt. Because remember, after the Reformation, it was illegal to be Catholic in England, for example. But it was in the 19th century that it became legal again, right? Our Englishmen, remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in the 19th century.
Also, that had to do with the vote.
Yeah. So because they are the Catholic is allowed again, so there are some, missioner who would go to England and help people to come to the Catholic Church. And one such person is Blessed Dominic of the Mother of God. Blessed Dominic, he was an orphan at the age of 8, raised up by his uncle and aunt. And then when Napoleon closed the religious houses in Italy, he encountered the passionate priests, the passionate order, you know, found by St. Paul of the Cross, which is his relics is inside the cross there. And so at that time, he experienced an interior call to be a preacher in England, to preach to the people in England. He got that call. And so his heart was in England, even though he joined the Passionate Order, he became a priest, he was working in Italy for the first 19 years of his life there as a priest, but his heart was always in England. And then he was sent to Belgium, but at the end, he got what he wanted, he went to England. And then he was there, you know, so when he was in Rome, he learned English, you know, beautiful language to learn. And then he would talk to any visitor who came to Rome from England. So his heart is always in England. And so he and his companion in the year 1840 established the first Passionate Order house in England. And then, in the year 1940, they established the first house outside Italy in Belgium in 1940. But and then in the year 1842, 2 years later, start the first house in England. So, you know, even in Belgium, his, you know, it was like, the Belgium for him was like a stepping stone, is to go out of Italy and then eventually it can go to England. So his heart is the English people. And when he was in England, he was there for 7 years until he died. He opened parishes, churches, and he worked hard as a home missioner. And then he received hundreds of converts from Anglican back to the Catholic Church. And of the people whom he received to the Catholic Church, the most famous one is, you know who he is?
Yes,
on
the tip of my tongue. Oh. Yes. What's his name? It's
John.
The guy.
John.
John Newman.
John, yeah. John Henry Newman. Blessed John Henry Newman. So he received John Henry Newman to the Catholic Church. John Henry Newman, you know, he belonged to the Oxford movement. It's because of the Protestant University of Oxford in England, they have the interest, growing interest in the Catholic Church. And John Henry Newman converted into the Catholic Church. John Henry Newman, I heard that he studied church fathers. You know, he studied the church fathers. And we know that, you know, how do we know the tradition? You know, the teaching of Jesus not written in the Bible is tradition. How do we know tradition? Is by the writings of the church fathers. You know, the church father, if they as a whole believe in some doctrine, that's, you know, that's the truth. And so, what happened is that he studied the church father and he recognized what the early church believed is the same faith of the Catholic Church. But what the early church believed is not the same as the Anglican Church.
Yeah.
And so because of that, that really helped him to eventually become Catholic. And so he became Catholic, he was ordained a Catholic priest in Rome, and then he came back to England and he established the oratory here with the relics of St. Philip Neri. You know, the oratory, remember what happened was that St. Philip Neri, he's the people who came to him for confession, he gathered them like a prayer group like we have here, and then the room they used for prayer meeting, for gathering, and for the lecture and the conference is called the oratory. And the priests who run the oratory are called the oratorians. And so they are a community of priests that have the oratory, and the lay people can come and they can pray there, have conference, have confession. So that's the oratory. So he established the oratory in England. And as a Catholic priest, he also wrote a good number of books, you know, like he wrote about some of the sermons. He wrote about a treatise on the philosophy of religion, but also he wrote an apologetics work to defend his own religious view. So he was a good apologetic, a person who defend the faith. And he was made cardinal by Pope Leo XIII in the year 1879. As a priest, being made cardinal, pretty big, you know. And he was he wasn't a bishop, but he was a cardinal in recognition of his theology. Now, during his trip to England in the year 2010, Pope Benedict XVI beatified John Henry Newman on September 19, 2010. A year before, in 2011, you know, Pope Benedict also allowed the Anglican to come into full communion, but retain the elements, you know, of that is from the Anglican community, but not contrary to the Catholic belief, you know.
Yeah, well,
and so that structure, you know, when they first set up that in 2011, it's under the patronage of Blessed John Henry Newman.
But what happened with us, and it happened in England.
Uh-huh.
Is that the church had been going along with its doctrines intact.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're close to the Catholic. I won't go into the difference because a lot of it has to do with politics. But what happened also was that the Anglican Church started to disintegrate.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was women, priests, gay marriage, etc. And so when that happened, people started to move over, like me. Mm-hmm. And that's how that happened. Because the Anglican Church does have, well, in the parts that, in the real parts of it, did have all the most of the basic doctrines that the Catholics have, except, of course, for the Pope and all that. And also for it's not divine presence, it's the real presence of mm-hmm. Christ, because they couldn't do it, mm-hmm. because if they did that, this gets political, they'd have to recognize the role of the priest. And the minute mm-hmm. they recognize the role of the priest, mm-hmm. there you are in the middle of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. So they hedge on that, and that is probably one of the key issues besides the Pope. Mm-hmm. But then what happened, then politics got involved, and the whole thing just has basically disintegrated. Mm-hmm. It's in the process of collapse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is very sad, because the thing is, the other thing which I wish people knew more about is the liturgy of the Anglicans. I don't know if you read it or not.
Mm-hmm. It's pure. Book of Common Prayer.
Yeah, right, the Book uh-huh. of Common Prayer, because it's poetry. It's light in our darkness, we beseech thee, O Lord, and by thy great mercy defend us from the dangers and perils of this night, which is pure. And of course, I know the... But in the communion, they talked about the body of Christ, but it was not the body of Christ. Yes. And hence it's enveloped.
They don't consecrate.
Hmm. I think some of the high Anglican, they do what we do at a like a mass.
The high church.
You know, the high church. But the problem is many of them do not have holy order, because they lost their apostolic succession during the Reformation. And so some Anglican, they got ordained bishop from the Orthodox, you know. So that some of them, they were validly ordained. Some of them are not. So sometimes it's hard to know which one is which.
Yeah, that's right. Because the thing is, they went over there.
Yeah.
Because in our church, this was in Charlottetown, when people left, they went to the Orthodox Church. Uh-huh. One guy nearly killed me because I came Catholic. But anyway, that's another story. But there was still the recognition, because the Anglicans lost... That well, at you know, like 50 years ago, they had real, it was really solid, but now there's nothing left. Well, in some churches there are, but that's why people started moving to the Catholic Church, because the Catholic Church position doesn't change, no mm-hmm. matter what the popularity of the thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is key, whereas the Anglicans did. And I couldn't stay in that.
Yeah. So, see, David gets a first-hand experience, and they can become Catholic. So that's the 19th century, you know, Blessed John Henry Newman, you know, and Blessed David right, in the 21st century. Yeah. So now, in the 19th century, also we see, now in the 19th and 20th century, of course, we see in many places, you know, people, they exalt reason to the point of excluding God. They rely on oneself to the point of, you know, well, not trusting in God. And we see, as Putin Shin pointed out, in the Middle Ages, you have the Age of Faith. And then you have the so-called Age of Reason, and now people go to the Age of Feeling, you know. And so it's going worse and worse. Age of Feeling, you know, if you offend me, I shoot you, you know. Don't you, have you heard about that so many times? You know, the Age of Feeling is not where we are at right now, you know. So don't step on Julie's toes, she will shoot you, she will bring you to the court, you know. Okay, don't insult her, you know. You know. Yeah. See? So, but you know, people focus on self and, you know, not trusting in God. But God seems to, you know, He really raise up saints that really trust in God and do amazing thing by trusting in God. And so we have the relics here of Saint Teresa, of Saint Faustina. But also I want to, a bit earlier than that, are the things in turn. You know, there's a culture of things in turn. And the St. John Bosco is a famous one. But also his friend, you know, St. John Bosco actually spent some time as a young man with St. Joseph Cottolengo, which is a wonderful saint, trust in divine providence, and his feast day is April 30th. And then we have St. Luigi Gunella, which is the religious community of Sister Rhonda, and his feast day is October. I don't know after his canonization now, do they still have that on October 24th? Maybe it's still on October 24th. And then we have St. Louis Oriani, his feast day is on March the 30th. So St. Gunella, actually, you know, as a young priest, he spent some time with St. John Bosco working for him. And then St. Louis Oriani, he was actually a faithful student of St. John Bosco. So actually, all three were friends of St. John Bosco. And they start work under, you know, divine providence. They call their work divine providence. So, you know, they are like really charismatically rely on divine providence, amazing things happen, you know. They could, one of them, they could sign to buy a house when they have no money, but then money came in and it's not enough money to buy the house, you know. Something like that, in recent time would be Mother Angelica. In the Mother Angelica, a nuns have not much money, have a whole empire of Eternal Word Television Network. And then, you know, there's a wonderful book called God Will Provide. It's mentioned that, you know, when in a typical month, you know, at the end of the month, she will have to pay for a big bill, you know, maybe a 6-digit number of bill. He got a few hundred dollars at the beginning of the month, but at the end, everything will pay for. You know, and she would say that, you know, if you are doing regular business, okay, you cannot do like that. You have to keep your book, you have to have, you know, accounting really well. But this is the work of God, so that's why it's different. So not that I can tell you, you know, go and buy a house and think you will pay for it. You will go bankrupt, okay? But, you know, but this is the work of God and it's different. So, you know, they trust, you know, because it's the work of God, they trust that God will look after. You know, St. John Bosco, the same thing, you know, he had no money, but he can start one school after another, one big thing after another, because he trusts in God. One example was in the year 1863 to the year 1868, he built the magnificent Basilica of Mary Help of Christians, you know. So what happened was, you know, he was shown by Our Lady in a dream to build the church there. So he saw the church already in the dream. And he knew that the place where the church was going to be built is the place of martyrdoms, of three martyrs. I think it's three. So he built the church there. And so he got a constructor. And then when he had to really, you know, the foundation lay already, St. John Bosco give the constructor the money, say, okay, this is what I have, you know, so the constructor opened the hand, and then the purse, the money came out, he thought it would be gold coming out from the purse, but only 8 pennies. And then St. John Bosco say, don't be alarmed, the Madonna will see to the payment of her church, I'm just the instrument, the cashier. Okay, so that's his attitude. And the constructor said at the end, he said, the church was paid for to the last cent. So how he raised money, you know, 1/6 of the church expense was paid for big donors, okay? So people like you and you, you know, lots of money, big donor, throw in money, 1/6 pay for like that. The other part, you know, at the end of the meeting, I give you blessing called the Mary Help of Christian Blessing, right? It's composed by St. John Bosco. He went around giving blessing, miracle happened. So in gratitude, people gave their money, small donation coming in. Sometimes he would invite people to make novena to honor Mary Help of Christian. And then amazing thing happened, so money came in. So they are all received, they received grace from Our Lady, and so those are the token of gratitude. And that's why St. John Bosco said the whole church was put up by means of graces granted by Mary. Every stone, every ornament represent one of her graces. So there was a beautiful church that's built that way. And St. John Bosco also, after the church was complete, you know, when you build a church, don't forget, you don't only build a building, you also need vestment, vessel, things like that, right? Different kind of things that need inside the church. People would donate those items, and the amazing thing was, nothing was repeated. They know they need this set of vestment, you know, they will give one set and another set, but nothing repeated. So whatever they need, they just came. Everything. You know, so he relied on divine providence, relied on Our Lady intercession. Amazing thing happened.
The end quote in I have come up with quotes. It's in Montreal that the Andre, I think his name was.
Yeah.
Something to Saint Joseph. I can't remember.
Did he build the oratory of Saint Joseph?
Yeah, the oratory of Saint Joseph. He just started building.
Yeah.
And I mean, he had nothing. He was a doorkeeper at the local monastery.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it was a monastery. And the money just kept coming, and he just kept praying and praying and praying. Now there's a huge.
Yeah.
Because I've been there. It's unbelievably big. And that's how it started. But you know, it wasn't that someone just laid the money on it. Just he just prayed, and the money kept coming.
Yeah.
You know, Father, that one at Queen of Peace Mary in here.
Is that the Dominican monastery?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When we were there for the open house, the sisters and the big sister or whatever, Mother Superior, she don't know what to get the money.
Uh-huh.
But amazing, most of the donations are from non-Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
Really? So she was telling us that, but there was a Protestant called. Is this a, what kind of a, it's a sister. Do you wear the habit? This, yeah. So money.
Money came, yeah.
So that's what it is, but we were like shocked that she was telling that a lot of the donors from the non-Catholics, so maybe they were Catholics before.
this happened. I know of various groups, and the real church is that, because I got in a fight in my church because they were practicing, you know, how to catch someone, give them money. And I said to them, I said, look, I said, if you're doing the work of God, God will make sure you get the number of the money. Because God will always provide.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you trust him. Of course, he tends to test us. Sometimes that gets a bit heavy, but.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, you know, also, you know, thinking about those, the saints who start the work of divine providence, like St. Joseph Cottolengo would say that, you know, their religious would do wonderful things if they respond promptly and trustfully to the impulse from above. And then Gunella would say, providence care for all who trust. And he also wanted, lack of trust is an obstacle to providence. And then Arioni would say, our policy is the great and divine charity which does good for all. Let our policy be that of the Our Father. Now, a saint that is famous and God really obviously wants her to be recognized is Saint Teresa the Little Flower, who born in the year 1874 and died in the year 1897. Now, as you know, she became a nun at the age of 15, and then she was doing really ordinary tasks in the monastery. And she mentioned, sanctity does not consist in this or that practice, but in a disposition of heart which makes us humble and small in the arms of God. So she was doing so many ordinary things, like the household chores, sacristy works, and also trained the novice. When she died, when she was dying, one of the nuns would say, you know, we don't know what to send to the other monastery to talk about her. Not much to talk about her, because she seems so ordinary. But what happened earlier before was, one of her sisters, who was the prioress of the monastery, recognized unusual holiness in Therese, and so ordered her to write her own autobiography. And so, because she wrote the autobiography, after she died, the prioress sent the autobiography to the other monasteries. And then the nuns, when they read the biography, they really liked Therese. And so they also start to ask her for intercession, and God allowed her to have so many miracles, one after another, that eventually let her start to pour into Lisieux, the monastery. You know, the volume become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And so it just all over the world is a bit nervous. And so it's getting bigger, bigger, and bigger, and bigger. So eventually, there was case for her beatification and canonization. So she was beatified within 30 years of her death and canonized a few years later. So it was pretty amazing, you know, that God allowed her to be known, recognized by the people, by so many people, because of her holiness of life. Oh no, it's Kitty.
Hi.
Hello.
Can I use this chair?
Go ahead, it's for you. Yeah. Yeah. You how do you get up here without going through
I just opened the door downstairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's now she said that miss no single opportunity of making some small sacrifice here by a smiling look, there by a kindly word, always doing the smallest rites and doing it all for love. And she also said, trust and trust alone should lead us to love. So her hallmark of becoming holy is she didn't rely on herself. She totally trusted in God like a little child, and let God be the one in charge. And she accept, you know, with humble submission, all the things that happened in her life. So suffering that she had, the thing that happened to her, she used all this as an opportunity to become holy. And also she did all the things with great love, all the little things that she needed to do. And so in that way, in the ordinariness of daily life, she became extraordinary holy. And then another thing that is also popular is Saint Faustina. As you know, that in the 1930s, she received revelation of Jesus concerning divine mercy. And Jesus told Saint Faustina about, you know, the grace of God, my graces of mercy, the graces of my mercy are drawn by means of one vessel only, and that is trust. The more a soul trusts, the more it will receive. So Jesus would say something like that to Saint Faustina, you know, the greater the sinner, the more right the person have the mercy of God. And also to talk about, you know, people who trust, you know, rely on the mercy of God will not perish, because Jesus will look after his affair as it is his own. So those are the things that really in the 19th century and 20th century really show that great trust in God can work marvels. And so that trust in divine providence, you know, the spiritual childhood of Saint Teresa the Little Flower, and then the trust in divine providence, but also in divine mercy of Saint Faustina, really become the trend of spirituality in modern time, that we have to trust in God. But also, now that will be for next time, God also seems to also give us another thing that have to go beyond ourselves and trust in God through our Blessed Mother. Because in the 19th and 20th century, we see that there are many, many Marian apparitions, you know, in the 19th and 20th century. And it start, and a lot of them actually in the very country that had the French Revolution, in France itself. There are a good number of Marian apparitions in France in the 19th century. You know, we will talk about that next time, about those apparitions. And then, of course, in the 20th century, we have the famous apparition of Our Lady of Fatima, but also a couple of operation, authentic operation in Belgium as well.
Didn't they have one in Ireland?
I think so. But I don't know if it is in the like the 19th century. You know, it might be a bit earlier. I think there's devotion of Our Lady of Knock, right?
Right, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, and then also, so that's another important development in the spiritual life in the church in modern time, is the Marian aspect. And then also, in the 20th century, we see that it's a century that seems to have a lot of suffering, a lot of suffering in the 20th century, and that will be the next time when we talk about that. You know, in the 20th century, it was estimated there are more martyrs in that one century than all the other centuries combined, and so it's a lot of bloodshed because of the world war, because of communism, because of civil war. It's a lot of bloodshed in the 20th century. But also, there's also a lot of what we call the victim souls. The victim soul, the soul that call to offer up their suffering and prayer to God in reparation for sins. So in the beginning of the 20th century, we have St. Gemma. And then later on, we have Blessed Alexandria, the one I mentioned about that in Portugal, who practiced the message of Fatima. But also besides Blessed Alexandria, there's two other ladies who also called to be victim soul, and one of them is actually died not too many years ago from now. So there are actually at least three that practiced the virtue of Fatima and became a victim soul, and one is beatified already, is the earliest one, Blessed Alexandria. And then you also have Teresa Newman, who lived for many years only with the Holy Eucharist, and then later on we have Patrick Peel. And of the martyrs, one of the outstanding one would be Edith Stein and also Maximilian Kolbe, who both died in the 1940s under the Nazi German. You know, those were the really famous 20th century martyrs. But of course, there are many, many martyrs in the 20th century.
There's a book called The Hiding Place. You've heard of it, I'm sure.
Possible, yeah.
Well, it was written by a Protestant, God help us. But anyway, it was written about a woman and her sister who ended up in a Nazi concentration camp, and how she survived. Her sister didn't, but it didn't matter. But how she survived, and it comes from the psalm, which one I can't remember, saying about, you know, God is my hiding place.
Mm-hmm.
And he anyway, she survived. For example, they were all stripped, and they had clothes, and then they got prison garb, which was just very loose skirt dress. And she had a Bible right here, and the guard thoroughly searched the person in front of her, somehow got distracted, and the one, because she had a Bible, you know, something like that, right here, and the guard got distracted, and then, of course, the next person they went over very carefully, and it went right through.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's no question about the authenticity. So one really ought to read it. It's called The Hiding Place by, but anyway, it's a really, really good book.
And so, you know, that's in the 20th century. And then, of course, at the end, we'll talk about John Paul II and Mother Teresa. So that will conclude the series of the church history.
Also, there was someone I was just going to say about who all these people, and people they never hear about, because God knows about it. There have been thousands and thousands of people. Oh, I prayed before the fall of communism. Incidentally, it fell on Christmas Day. There's something called the Blue Army.
The Blue Army, yeah.
So we were praying for all that for
Saint
years.
The Rosary.
Mm-hmm. We were praying for that for years.
When we pray the Rosary, you know, the meditation I read is from the Blue Army, for the Blue Army prayer cell, you know.